Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of the Amber May Show. I am so excited about today's episode. I have Dr. Robert Steek joining us today. He is a compound pharmacist, and we're going to get into some pharmacy tips and tricks, things that you can do naturally at home. We're going to learn a little bit more about technology and how that's incorporating with the globalist agenda and how that's affecting our health. Did you know that it is possibly affecting your health today? I have videos to show you, and it's going to hopefully blow your mind that you will want to like, share, and subscribe this episode far and wide. So I really do hope you enjoy this episode today. It's very informative, a lot of good information coming your way. If you believe in what I'm doing, please consider becoming an angel investor. And the easiest way to do that is going to theambermayshow.com. Hit the donate button and donate whatever you feel you can donate, 5, 10, 100, whatever you feel you can donate. That would be so helpful for our program. Or you can be a $5 monthly subscriber by going to theambermayshow.locals.com. That's theambermayshow.locals.com. I always add more content, so join me on Telegram at The Amber May Show. I'm at True Social Amber May, Frank Social Amber May, and Clout Hub, so find me in those locations. Well, without any further ado, I'd love to introduce you to Dr. Robert Steek. Friends, like I told you, we have Dr. Robert Steek joining us today. I want to welcome you to the program. Thanks so much for spending time with us today.
Amber, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
I'm excited because I have not had an opportunity to interview a pharmacist, and you have a different perspective on medicine. You have more knowledge of the pharmaceutical industry than your average doctor, and you own your own compound pharmacy. So I'm excited to talk to you. So like, what got you into wanting to be interested in pharmaceutical work? And then as you've done, you know, work as a pharmacist, like, has your perspective changed on what you thought medicine was to what it is today?
I can cover all of that. So I'll just tell you, my interest in pharmacy school was just simply due to the fact that I grew up in southwestern Pennsylvania on a small farm. My grandparents had a larger farm. We raised beef. My father was a steel mill worker. He worked in the same steel mill for 47 years, and it was ingrained in my brain as a young kid. I don't want you to have to do this, son. I want you to go to college and have a meaningful career. And there just happened to be a good pharmacy school in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I went to Duquesne University. I live out in Las Vegas now and have for 27 years.
We're neighbors. I'm Arizona. You're Las Vegas. It's a four-hour drive.
I like it. I like being in the Southwest a lot. But It's just, you know, I went to pharmacy school. I thought, well, this could be a good stepping stone degree because a lot of my classmates went on to veterinary school, medical school, osteopathic school, or some other career. I wanted to get into the pharmaceutical industry. So I graduated in 1995. I did work around Pittsburgh for a little bit at a couple of places. I needed to pay off student loans, so I got a job. Yep. And I moved out to Las Vegas in 1997. The wages were higher. There was no state income tax. I had a county tax to pay too. And cost of housing was good. And I thought, well, Las Vegas will be the place I'll be for about 4 or 5 years. And here it's 27 years later. And you mentioned the drug industry. Well, I did work in the drug industry. So I wanted to try sales for a little while. And a lot of drug companies were reluctant to hire pharmacists for sales job. But I got one just because it was a drug to promote that nobody else wanted to promote. It wasn't very successful. And after a few years in sales, I got a job with a biotech company, and that's typically a more senior position. I'm 10 years younger than all of my colleagues at that point. And it was still another sales job focusing on drugs that were used for rare pediatric immune disorders, so orphan drugs. And there was a drug in research for hepatitis C. So I became familiar with virology, infectious disease, immunology. And a position opened up because the medical science liaison in the West, who lived in Arizona at the time, he left the company. So the company just said, look, you're a PharmD. We don't use you for sales. you have to be the medical liaison. And I managed 35 clinical trial sites throughout the Western United States. So the Scottsdale Mayo was one of my trial sites. And my job was to get patients into the trial. I'm learning about the pharmaceutical industry at this point after leaving the counter, the prescription counter, as a retail pharmacist, even in the hospital. You know, the older someone was who came into the chain drugstore, the more medications they were on. Mm-hmm. And people just got slower and older. And, you know, this just isn't right. We have these man-made molecules, and someone in their 70s or 80s spends their whole day just figuring out what prescription medication to take when. And this isn't healthcare. We're just sick. And overprescribing got worse. So I did my MBA in 2003, and I wanted to study something called the patent cliff. And what the drug industry knew, is that by 2010, 18 of the top 20 selling drugs of all time would come off patent. That leads us to kind of the state of where we are today with what is pushed by the drug companies. I also learned in my research that at that time, so early 2000s, 60% of all primetime television advertising expenditure was from drug companies. Now, this created, you know, this horrible machine of what the perception of medicine is. So the public thinks what they see on TV, these commercials, this is what medicine is. I got to go get this prescription drug. Mm-hmm. And the drug industry also knew at that time, when a patient walked into an office, 60% of the time they would ask for a drug by name, not complaining of symptoms, asking the doctor to diagnose, say, I need this drug. And 80% of the time they asked for it, they got it. Now, fast forward 20 years later, I studied data from a research group called Merritt Hawkins, and I had an aspiration to found a company that was a concierge medicine company. And what that meant was people would pay an annual fee to get more time and attention from the doctor. And we would train our doctors more on the functional medicine side, which
I love functional medicine. And I want you to go into what that is, please, because I'm a big believer in functional medicine.
Well, I'll tell you that the standard primary care office visit as it is today is 7.6 minutes long. And doctors will tell me it's enough for one problem and two prescriptions. And I got to get you out the door because the corporation that I work for measures me by how rapidly I'm getting patients out the door. And I've had some physicians get interested and convert and say, hey, this is where I learned. I took my entire fellowship through A4M, the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. I did a George Washington Integrative Medicine Certificate. They're like, why? You're a pharmacist. I said, you know, I think it's important to just know stuff. And no, I don't diagnose. I don't prescribe. But look, I'm talking to you. I'm telling you about something as simple as magnesium deficiency or take a cholesterol drug and how it depletes coenzyme Q10, and you're a physician, maybe you will develop an interest and break away from that corporate medicine system, focus on functional medicine, and we'll work together to make people healthier. Because as a pharmacist, I make recommendations. Like I said before, I don't prescribe, I don't diagnose, and I work with the wellness company.
As you know, I love the wellness company.
Well, they said, Robert, you're ideal. We're going to call you our chief of integrated therapeutics, because I see medicine going is there's a number of drugs that are generic now. They're really cheap, and we're repurposing them. Look, we did that during COVID. Mm-hmm. We have hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin that are used to treat COVID. And we're finding out, gosh, there's doctors with the wellness company like William Mackis, Dr. Ryan Cole is also out there too, talking about the anti-cancer benefits of ivermectin. That's just two examples of old, inexpensive drugs that I think we'll see repurposed. And when you integrate into that, what I look at is the functional medicine component. Well, let's give you a nutrient-dense diet that's devoid of processed foods. Let's get you out in the sunshine, barefoot on the ground, change the environment you're in. And you know what? The body can heal itself. This is a principle called vitalism. If you give the body the right environment and the right things in the body, okay, clean water, you detoxify the body has the tendency to heal, which we didn't do with traditional medication. And when I thought clinical research was a more pure pursuit in the pharmaceutical industry, it wasn't, but it taught me a lot of valuable lessons, how to understand research. And when you keep replicating the same results over and over and over in a positive manner, let's talk about how we get flour and sugar out of the diet, or how we, you know, tell people to increase their magnesium intake, or over and over, you look at the data on ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine published, hey, that's powerful information, not just one study, but a multitude of studies. And this is kind of like the long arc to get me, you know, to where you wanted to start, Amber, was I've seen all of this. I've been on the, quote, dark side of the industry thinking, wow, this is a good job and it's intellectually stimulating, but no, it pushes drugs still, even in clinical research. And yeah, I bought a compounding pharmacy in 2005. And most of what we do here is hormone replacement therapy. I do a lot of the kit fulfillment for the wellness company. So we have the antibiotic emergency kit. We have a COVID emergency kit. Why? Because early treatment is crucial.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's hard to find in the community a doctor who is willing to prescribe hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin, or a community pharmacy like one of the chain drugstores, they've downright refused these prescriptions,
yes,
which is not something they should do. That's not the pharmacist's role.
Mm-hmm.
We have access to it through free thinking physicians, part of the wellness company, that say, look, early treatment is key. Why don't you have this stuff in stock? And mm-hmm. and that's made my, I do a couple other cool things too for the Department of Energy patients, since I'm out here in Nevada and Area 51.
That would be cool to talk about, right? Area 51.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I have patients that are the blue collar guys, you know, they're the workers. And there's a lot of stuff underground, right? And they power all of that with certain types of small nuclear reactors. So imagine a nuclear reactor we can put on a submarine, we can put underground. And it can power a lot of stuff. And a lot of it is exposure illness. So these guys get radiation exposure. They accumulate a heavy metal called beryllium. Sometimes they get some lung issues. And I'm one of 26 pharmacies in the country that's credentialed to help the doctors. So the doctors who see these patients have to be credentialed by the Department of Energy too. And what we use to get the beryllium out, for example, it's just something has to be made in a pharmacy, in a lab like I have, but it's not commercially available. So I'm the reluctant pharmacy owner. I don't know how I got here from farming. And it's been good. I've just ran with it wherever I could. I like the information that I've learned, and I get to talk to people like your audience. So fire away with your questions, Amber. I'm happy.
Okay, you piqued my curiosity. I did not know ivermectin could be used as a cancer treatment. Explain that to me, because this is new information to me.
Well, there's a couple things to point to. There is a book written by a person, Hannah Kroger, and it's called Parasites, the Enemy Within. This is a very short book, easy read. Okay. In fact, I think you can just download it for free from a digital library. And when you read it, you realize, gosh, there are so many chronic diseases that are due to these parasitic infections that are just typically not addressed in modern medicine. I mean, when's
They're
the last
not.
Time... someone has been to a physician and has tested a parasite panel. There's a doctor, his name is Tom Lodi, and his website is drlodi.com. He has a number of TikTok videos out, and it seems like his whole practice is built around Hannah Kroger's book. He does two things with every patient, and he says in his videos, I don't care what the chronic malady is that hasn't been diagnosed. Every patient that comes in here gets one of two things, a heavy metals detox, because you all got them. We even stopped testing. Everybody accumulates heavy metals. And a parasite cleanse. And he has a rotating regimen of different anti-parasite drugs, not just one. And when it comes to ivermectin, one of the ways that it works on parasites is it breaks down these microtubules, kind of like its structure, to make it this solid little creature, this tiny microscopic creature that lives in your body. But ivermectin can also break down microtubules that are forming due to solid tumor cancers.
Hey, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break. Hey, so when you are a guest at the Amber Mae's house, you get luxury. And how you get luxury is I have this sleeping couch, this sleeper sofa, and you're telling me that's not luxury. It is when you put a MyPillow mattress topper on it. All my guests that have come over and stayed at my house have really enjoyed this sleeper sofa, which says a lot because they're getting to sleep on the MyPillow pillows, and you get the MyPillow mattress topper. And then it doesn't stop there with the luxury, because when you shower at the Anna Mae Show's house, you get to have a MyPillow towel. I don't have the kids using it. I just let the adults have the luxury. So the adults get to use the MyPillow and they're phenomenal. And right now there's a massive sale going on with the MyPillow towels. So you should really put luxury into your home and live it every day like Amber May does every day. So I have a MyPillow mattress topper on my bed. I use the MyPillow sheets, the MyPillow towels, MyPillow slippers. I live luxury and I don't have to pay the luxury price because MyPillow has promo code. So use my name, Amber, and save up to 66% off and you can live luxurious as well.
Hey, this is Boone Cutler and you're listening to the Amber May Show.
Hey friends. New variants means new vaccines and even more scare tactics. You know, Dr. Peter McCullough gets asked all the time, how do I get this out of my body? Well, Spike Support Formula is the only product I've seen that contains ingredients researched to block and dissolve COVID spike protein in the bloodstream. Whether you've got the shot, you're watching research pour in about vaccine shedding, or you've had a bad bout of COVID, Spike Support is a serious concern. And while we won't truly know the extent of the devastating effects for many years, there is something you can do right now to protect yourself. Hundreds of people, vaccinated or not, have reported better mental clarity and increased energy levels. Head to twc.health/AmberMay to buy the wellness company's Spike Support Formula and get back to feeling your best. Use promo code AmberMay at checkout and you will save some money. So that's twc.health/AmberMay to save some money at checkout. You are listening to the Amber May Show, and now we return to the show already in progress.
So Dr. William Mackus and Dr. Ryan Cole have both discussed this. And William Mackus has published articles on 8 different mechanisms. I just mentioned one. 8 different mechanisms by which ivermectin is found to be effective against some cancer. So, but I'll give you some caution, because where I see the most successful practitioners using ivermectin is in combination with other drugs. They also do it in combination with a zero carbohydrate, zero sugar diet. It's true, sugars feed cancers. They add a lot of nutritional adjuncts, which are important. You'll see there's a website called fenbendazole.org. Now, that's not approved for use in humans. That is a pet. That is a veterinary dewormer. But Joe Tippins published a protocol using only fenbendazole to break down tumors, is what he claims. And there are some physicians who will actually advocate, they can't prescribe fenbendazole, but they advocate for their patients to research the combination use of both ivermectin and fenbendazole. But again, for a solid tumor cancer, for a leukemia, I'm just not aware of data that shows, hey, this blood type cancer, this bloodborne cancer, it'll work for. And and what I found too in the world of integrative therapeutics, especially when it comes to cancer, there's usually not one magic bullet that says, okay, I can just take ivermectin and I'm good. My cancer is going to go away. For some patients that happens and it's a miracle. But when you integrate these other approaches and ivermectin at the right dose, so I will tell you, like I said, I don't prescribe, but I see the prescribing patterns. And some of the physicians that are specifically using ivermectin for cancer will prescribe a dose that's much higher than the dosage range typically used for COVID. Because one of the mechanisms of ivermectin is it neutralizes the spike protein. It prevents spike protein binding. It neutralizes the inflammation of the spike protein. Okay. But we use, I've seen doctors use higher doses for cancer. And the reason why I think this is all great is the whole world, the medical world and the public, is discovering now that, wow, there are these alternatives that the pharmaceutical industry would never discuss. Because remember, the patent cliff I told you about. By 2010, 18 of the top 20 selling drugs of all time would be off patent. What would the drug companies have to do to maintain revenue? Their duty is to shareholders, not to public health. They would have to come up with expensive drugs we call the peptide drugs. So the small molecule drugs you swallow, those are all off patent. Okay. In fact, they're over the counter now. Some of the biggest hits of all time, like Prilosec, don't need a prescription for anymore. And we see the drugs that are these injectable peptide or protein-based drugs. We call the immune response modifiers like Humira, Enbrel, rheumatoid arthritis, psoriatic arthritis, Cosentyx. These drugs are even advertised, you know, for Netflix movies.
I was just going to tell you that you hear about those specific drugs all the time on TV, all the time, on all the subscription apps out there. You hear those ones all the time, and Ozempic. You hear those ones all the time.
And right, they're expensive. I mean, insurance usually pays for these drugs, right? So who ultimately does that cost? I can tell you, as a small employer, I pay healthcare insurance premiums for my employees, and wrapped up into that is the pharmaceutical benefit, which is the biggest portion of that single payment that is typically unified. Like, I can't just say, look, I'll buy the medical coverage from you, Mr. Insurance Broker, but I'm going to find the pharmacy coverage somewhere else. No, it's one payment. And the pharmacy cost keeps going up, up, up. Why? I think to cover these expensive drugs. And what I didn't predict when I did my MBA, I did predict, okay, the rise of peptide drugs because of their patent duration, that would last. But I didn't predict how much the push for vaccines to maintain profitability would be.
And I want to talk about that. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about vaccines because it took me a long time to have children. And so when I finally had children, I was hearing on the outskirts, on the peripheral, about these moms saying there was vaccine injuries and autism. And I didn't know if I should believe them. I didn't know if they were wacky. I didn't know if, if it was true. And so I would go to my physician and say, hey, you know, I'm hearing this stuff about autism and vaccines, and are these safe? And they're like, oh, of course it's safe. Those have been, you know, debunked, and the CDC and the studies and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, would you give them to your kids? They're like, absolutely, we would give them to our kids. So I gave so much vaccines to my children. And so I couldn't be more happier on one hand that the COVID vaccine came out. And then it really solidified to me that there is a thing called vaccine injury. And going back to your cancer, I want to show you, I've done some research on my own about vaccines. And what was surprising to me, and maybe you can shed some more light on it, maybe not. What was surprising to me is if you go to the FDA package inserts. Now, this is on my website, theambermayshow.com. You hit the resource tab, you go to childhood vaccine info, and there's a list of approved FDA vaccines, and you have the FDA inserts that you can get a list of, okay? So for this one, I don't remember what shot this is. It might be, I can't remember which one it is, but at 13.1, this might be the Tdap one, 13.1, they do not test to see if this vaccine causes cancer, changes your gene mutagenesis, or impairs fertility. And that ticks me off to no end, because I think this could be the vaccine schedule that we're all shoved down our throat from childhood to adulthood, could be a big part of the explosion of cancers, especially because of COVID. We've seen you would go from no cancer to stage 4 cancer. And, you know, you see children, I had to go to a 6-year-old's funeral because they died of brain cancer. How come a 6-year-old has cancer? Well, if you go back to these package inserts and you realize they're not testing for cancer, we could be putting carcinogenic material inside our body unknowingly because they're not testing for it.
You know, it's tragic, and there's no disincentive for the vaccine manufacturers. There's no incentive to check for safety. There's no disincentive because in the 1980s, mm-hmm. Congress enacted a protective law. So the vaccine manufacturers are completely indemnified from any proven vaccine injury. Now, there is something also called the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. So that was incepted. It was the National Childhood Vaccine Act, I think, was the law that indemnified pharmaceutical companies, right? And then you got the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. And even though it's arduously difficult to bring forth the case, all cases are sealed. Compensation program has paid out over $2.3 billion since its inception. And here's the thing about what you mentioned, because I'm an older parent, older than, say, my classmates. I have two that are 13 and 8. Okay, a lot of my classmates, I mean, they have college-age children now, okay? Mm-hmm. So I waited a while. And I went to pharmacy school. Now, most don't have the career that I have had. You know, if retail drugstore, hospital drugstore, some went on to pursue other programs. And then they're still, though, in the Western allopathic-only medication model. Some of them, you know, they go to medical school. A few went to osteopathic school. And there's no vaccines, because we have to use them. And what's clear in the epidemiologic evidence is the more vaccines that were added to the childhood immunization schedule. I mean, at the time I did my research 20 years ago, the average American child received 26 doses of vaccines in the first 2 years of life. Europeans would receive 12. The more vaccine doses that are given, the higher the rates of autism or any of the spectrum disorders. And then you have doctors that were called quacks and criminals, like Andrew Wakefield, Sherry Tenpenny. Yes. You also have, RFK Jr. talking about this too. You know, the evidence is clear. But when the pharmaceutical complex is completely indemnified from vaccine injury, that's a problem. So yes, you're right. There are links to cancers. We talk about the COVID vaccines, and you'll look up something called SV40. So you'll look up the fact that this simian virus component in the vaccine, that has led to a rise in cancers. And there's also recent articles now. So again, pathologist Roger Hodgkinson, Ryan Cole, Dr. William Mackus, he focuses on cancer treatment. And they all talk about how the vaccines are destroying certain genes that we have. We have genes that actually continuously read and repair errors in our DNA. We have DNA protection and we have DNA repair mechanisms. But what if there's a mechanism by which any vaccine, like the COVID vaccine, destroys our body's natural protective mechanisms against DNA? You're going to have DNA errors, which is what you pointed out. You saw that. You saw, well, wow, some of these things mess up your DNA, and that's probably going to lead to a cancer because your cells just don't replicate properly. And that's what the physicians are pointing out too. And, you know, it's an issue that I hope we can find ways in medicine to solve, because I want to have the most positive outlook that I can, but I'm also pragmatic as well. It's, you know, you have to have like-minded physicians, patients that actually drive it. I mean, look, patients, when they ask for a drug by name because they saw a television commercial, well, you know what they should be telling their doctors? You need to research this. Have you seen this article? Published data, which is what I encourage people to bring in. But, you know, the attitude of so many practitioners, not all, and it is changing slowly, is don't bring me that stuff that you researched. I'm the one who decides treatment. I'm
Dr.
the doctor.
That happened to me. That happened to me with my pediatrician. I got so tired of the masks, so tired of them. I brought scientific studies that masks do not prevent the transmission of the COVID virus. He did not want to look at it. He did not want to have an adult conversation with me. And I really liked him as a doctor. I thought we had a great relationship. And he didn't even tell me to my face he was going to dismiss me as a client, a patient. I had to get it in a letter. So you are absolutely right. I did the research. I brought it to him. And I think that was the attitude. And he didn't want to hear it. So in a letter, not even to my face, not even to give me the option. Well, you know what? Regardless of what the scientific journal says, regardless of what you brought, this is still going to be our policy. If you want to be my patient still, wear the mask. If not, then we'll have to part ways. Not even giving me that to change my mind if I wanted to. And we've had this mask thing forever. You know, by this time it was a long time into the whole COVID thing. I'm so tired of it, right? And all this scientific information's coming out that the masks aren't changing anything. And he didn't have the decency to tell me to my face, but he didn't want to hear it. I think because it came from me. What do I know? I'm just a mother of two. I don't have a science degree in physiology, biology, or a medical degree. I don't know what I'm talking about.
You know, that attitude is horrible. And there's a couple of pediatricians that I met, a husband and wife team. You know, my two sons are engaged in dance, like their mom, ballerina. And I met these both pediatricians. And the husband would actually listen to some of the words I say. The wife just couldn't stand the sight of me when I'd go to pick up the kids. But the husband listened. And I told him, I said, did you know that 20 years ago, when I did my research, 60% of all revenue at pediatric practices is vaccines.
I have the proof. You're absolutely right. On my website, I have proof of that.
At his practice, he works for a corporation, doesn't have a private practice. He said, Robert, it's actually higher. It's 64%. I said, yeah. Let me ask you, you're not making money on the $20 well check, are you? I said, no. And I said, so driving these vaccines, there's lots of bonuses for them. I said, now, what are the primary ailments that you do treat for the kids? Is it asthma, allergies, sinus infections? I said, now look at the connection between the vaccines and asthma and allergies and chronic upper respiratory tract infections. So from the vaccines, you have that as a profit center. The ailments they cause are a much smaller percentage of your revenue, but part of the revenue. And I try to drop seeds in someone who's at least a little bit open-minded to say, you should look at this. I keep a file. I stopped recording over 5 years ago, over 250 articles that link vaccine to injury. And there's a real frequent occurrence when you see vaccine administration and then co-administration with something to get the fever down, like Tylenol, the acetaminophen. Now, that marriage of those two things, there's a lot of theory out there, and it shows valid because it keeps getting reproduced. Remember what I said, when you keep reproducing the same results, that's powerful information. And but what you did, and you know, when I was 20 years younger, and not only did I join A4M, I taught in the functional medicine modules for A4M and the hormone therapy modules. I was very reserved in how I would speak to physicians because I'm just the young guy. They're all older than me. And now I'm over 50. I'm a little bit more cynical. And a doctor like you encountered that wouldn't even look at the information published in the literature, that gave you a letter, couldn't tell you to your face, that's a male doctor, so I have no reservation about calling him a coward. And what he demonstrated to you by not even looking at the information is rank scientific cowardice, wouldn't even look at it because it might change his mind, because something told him, something has control over him. You have to do this. This is policy. And there's no amount of knowledge you can accumulate, even if it's truthful, that is going to cause you to look the other way. That's not somebody that should be treating human beings as patients, in my opinion. So, and I'm sorry that you had to experience that. And I hope your kids are healthy and well.
Yeah, you know, I realize that maybe I don't want to go to a doctor like that, because if he's not going to look at information I'm bringing as a mom that's concerned for her kids, and it was simple as a mask and realizing, okay, we've all been lied to that masks stop transmission of viruses. If he can't even look at that, what else are we going to miss? Obviously, I went to these doctors, right? It's a group of doctors, but I would pick one out of the doctor that I liked the most, that I felt most comfortable with. And I was going to him for the vaccine information. And you're right about the respiratory thing. My son at 2 years old, I think, got vaccine injured, because right around that time, he developed what they were diagnosing him as croup. And that has now we have the diagnosis of asthma, because I'm like, supposedly he was supposed to grow out of this croup thing. And yet it's still at 5 years old, 6 years old, still coming back. And I went to an asthma doctor. And you know what that man did? He gave me all kinds of budesonide to bring home during COVID. And I was so grateful because he knew about Dr. Richard Bartlett with the budesonide and the COVID and the ivermectin and stuff. And he gave my family a lot of budesonide to bring home. And then obviously albuterol too for my son. But I realized he was vaccine injured. He had to be. I think I was too. Dr. Andy Wakefield, you mentioned him about I saw the vaxxed, which is the MMR one. And then I saw the one he did with the women who had the tetanus shot. And after the tetanus shot, and I have that information on my website, if anyone wants to see it, the information from that documentary, papers from doctors who were on the documentary, have scientific information about the link between infertility and the tetanus shot with the HCG mixed in. My body fundamentally changed in my early 20s when I was, because I was a dialysis tech going through school. It helped me go to journalism school that way. And so I had to take the tetanus shot, and I just felt a change. So I think I was vaccine injured because I could not have children. It took me 8 years to finally have a baby. Hey, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break. Hey friends, I want to tell you what I recently did. I broke away from the big three. I was tired of the woke mogul, and I wanted to go to a Christian conservative company that I could trust, that support the organizations that I value, and that is Patriot Mobile. So when you go to patriotmobile.com/Amber, you are going to get free activation. It is super easy to get started to switch from the big three to Patriot Mobile. They'll walk you step by step. It is not difficult at all. And I've had tremendous service since I made the switch. So I recommend if you want to vote with your wallet and support a company that supports your values, go to patriotmobile.com/Amber and save on a free activation. So that's patriotmobile.com/Amber. Now the links are in the description below or on my website at theambermayshow.com/promo. So check that out. So it's time to vote with our wallet, ditch the woke mobile, and go to a Christian conservative mobile. And that is patriotmobile.com/Amber.
Hi, this is Vem Miller from the Blood Money Podcast. I'm here to say don't ever miss an episode of the wonderful Amber May Podcast.
In the early 1900s, like in 1920s, 30s, you with $20, you used to be able to buy an entire men's suit. You could get the handkerchief, the tie, the vest, the jacket, the pants, the belt, everything. And you could also buy that with a piece of gold. Now, in today's standards, you can't buy much with $20, maybe a tie, maybe that's it. You could not even come close to an entire men's suit with a $20 bill. However, if you still had a piece of gold, you could still buy an entire men's suit with that piece of gold. See, silver and gold have intrinsic value, and it's had intrinsic value since the beginning of time. It's always been a currency around since the existence of man, gold and silver. So why not protect your investments and protect your earning power by owning some gold and silver? And the easiest way to do that is contacting Jim Tewell at EPSWealthManagement.com. That's Edward Paul Sam, WealthManagement.com, EPSWealthManagement.com. Give him a call and let him know you'd like them to have some tangible assets in your portfolio. You'd like to have some gold and silver, and he can help you do that. So if you're ready to protect yourself and protect your investments, then go ahead and give Jim Tewell a call, whom you've seen on our program at EPSWealthManagement.com. Let him know Amber May sent you.
You are listening to The Amber May Show, and now we return to the show already in progress.
So I think I was vaccine injured. And so I'm kind of angry at the vaccine industry, because remember when I just showed you the package insert, they don't test to see if it causes infertility. Probably because they know it will.
Either that, or they don't care, about the safety profile, because there's no downside to the vaccine manufacturer in case there's a dangerous issue. They're looking at what can we plug in to drive revenue. So, you know, that patent cliff where you have your multi-billion dollar drugs falling off patent, the drug industry had to shove things into the pipeline to introduce and bring out to the public. And look, during that same time, so 2003 to 2020, let's look at the introduction of so many vaccines. I mean, honestly, I haven't checked it lately because my kids are not vaccinated, what the number of doses are that kids are recommended to receive by the American Academy of Pediatrics. I'm sure it's higher than 26 now, because 20 years ago, it was 26 doses. What is it, 70 doses?
It is
now?
36 or 37 now. Okay, with the COVID
in the first 2 years, in the first 2 years of life, that's outrageous.
No, that's total. I think the total is like 36. No, you're right. 36 in the first 2 years of life, because the kids get about 72, 73, 74 doses, childhood vaccine on the childhood vaccine schedule. Yep.
It's just outrageous. And look at what the media does in collusion with the drug industry. So remember, pharmaceutical industry, your best primetime television advertiser 20 years ago. Now you even see them on streaming services. But they also do a good job controlling the media to block the truth. And when someone like Andy Wakefield, RFK Jr., Sherry Tenpenny, she has some really elegant arguments about the vaccines. And when they call these people quacks, witch doctors, voodoo, they're just liars. They're what they're talking about is very dangerous. They have to target those people, because what the media shows you, that if you stick your neck out for the truth, which your pediatrician was unwilling to do because of that cowardice, which I would have no problem telling that man to his face that he's a coward, because he wouldn't stand up for his patients. The media makes an example. This corporate pharmaceutical media complex makes an example out of people and say, well, we'll ruin your career. We'll you know, marginalize you. We'll tease you. We'll make fun of you. And, you know, I got to say, when you have with the wellness company, for example, people like Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Jim Thorpe, Harvey Reese. I mean, it's a short list of physicians out there. You know, there's William Mackus as well, Ryan Cole, pathologists. It's a very short list that have had the courage. I mean, and that word is in, you know, one of Dr. McCullough's books on the whole topic, COVID, the courage to face COVID. And that's what it takes. That's what it takes amongst the medical and the scientific community to break away. Because as soon as you start to stick your neck out, they call it, well, this is not standard of care. Standard of care is what's most common that everyone is doing. And you're kind of safe there because now they build into the liability policies. Well, you violated the CDC policy and didn't vaccinate this person. So you know what? Your medical malpractice insurance is at risk. So I don't completely blame the medical practitioners.
Right.
Know, where I tell them, look, you're at fault if you don't know the information.
Yeah.
If you're not looking at what Dr. McCullough is publishing, if you're not looking at all of this information published that so many physicians have brought to light on the potential injuries of vaccine, if you're not looking at the association between the COVID vaccines and all sorts of problems, then you're just ignorant and you're willfully ignorant. Because here's the next step. Once you become aware, if you are a conscientious person and you're trapped in this system that is going to, I told you, what is it going to do to the practitioners that stick their necks out there? They're going to eviscerate them. Well, your next step is that you're going to consider, if you're a conscientious person, gosh, I've learned all of this information. Let's just say about the masks, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And once you know it, in my opinion, you are responsible for it. And I'm sure I showed 51 studies at the outbreak of COVID that showed that not only did masks not prevent infection, these were already published, they actually increased the risk of infection because you breathe that moist air
in
the mask, right? And all these things start to grow, all these fungi, these other bacteria. And now when you inhale, you have to inhale more forcefully because you have to breathe in through the mask and poof, you have the development of all these upper respiratory tract infections, secondary to mask wearing. You're touching the mask, it's putting on the ground, people put it in their pocket, right? That's just one thing about the masks. And it goes on from there. There's even worse. I think there's a physician named Dr. Russell Blaylock, who talked about not only the toxicity of COVID vaccines, but the fallacy of wearing the masks. And he discussed respiratory acidosis. When you don't have proper oxygen exchange, because people have been conditioned to be fearful of breathing air, you can lead to respiratory acidosis, renal acidosis. Okay, so these are metabolic conditions because of poor oxygen exchange, and that increases the risk of cancer. And look at what we're seeing today, the explosion of cancers that these pathologists especially have talked about. This is incredibly disconcerting.
No kidding. And you know what else is disconcerting? I want to play this clip for you because I don't think that many people know this is out there as regards to COVID and what they're trying to do with COVID. But the FDA has approved its first electronic pill. Let me play this for you. This is Pete Santilli. I found this video on his show and I wanted to share it with you.
And trace and control you. And it's not a conspiracy theory either. Listen to the scientists that want two-way transmission of the drugs that they inject in you via Pfizer. Listen to Pfizer themselves.
This is the director.
They already said they already got it approved. This is the director of Pfizer saying he wants you to consume a two-way transmitter so they can get you to comply.
I have a question about patient engagement, and you had touched on this before. All of these advances are amazing, but even if you make the greatest drug or the greatest wearable, there's no guarantee that the patient is going to take the drug or wear the device. So how are you thinking about technology to engage the patient?
Yeah. Again, maybe I will use an example. I think it's fascinating what's happening in this field right now. I mean, FDA approved the first electronic pill, if I can call it like that. So it is a basically biological chip that it is in the tablet. And once you take the tablet and dissolves into your stomach, sends a signal that you took the tablet. So imagine the applications of that, compliance, the insurance companies to know that the medicines that patients should take, they do take them. It is fascinating what happens in this field. But of course, There will be an initial cost that someone needs to invest.
Okay, so I thought that was interesting. I don't think people realize that this is now here. He said the FDA approved electronic pill for compliance. So they're moving us closer and closer to a merge man with machine, you know? Who really gives a rip in the big scheme of things if I take a pill or not? The only one I'm hurting if I really do need that medication is myself. It affects nobody else. It affects me. Maybe if it's something that could cause death down the road because I'm not taking my medicine correctly or I'm not taking it at all, maybe my husband will care. But in the grand scheme of things, the world will not care if I die because I don't take a pharmaceutical drug. They're not going to care. Yet, these people at the World Economic Forum care so much about every aspect of my life that now there's this thing called, have you heard of this? This FDA pill, this electronic pill you can swallow?
I have heard of it. There will be many that are introduced like it. And this is what I see. I'm going to go a little esoteric for you for a minute because I have a friend, a mentor. He is a physician. He's also an admiral in our U.S. Navy. He's not working as a doctor right now. He's out there fighting this fight against people like that.
Did you say he's an admiral?
He is an admiral.
Wow.
And fighting against people like that at the World Economic Forum, they love totalitarian control. They want centralized control of all nations, the elimination of governments. And what are they? They're telling us what they want for the people. You will own nothing and be happy. We're going to use our venture funds like BlackRock and Vanguard to buy every single family home there is. Yep. And when you think about it, you know, I had this discussion with one of the wellness company doctors in a good man. Okay. And we were at an event together and I said, you know, if there's one thing I learned when I asked my mentor, I said, you know, you could commission me and I could go do stuff, you know, research, learn, investigations, whatever. He said, no, you need to stay doing what you're doing, but I'll train you. And one of the things he said is, you know, you have no idea as a good person how much sinister influence there is out there in the world. And you have to start to think like these people just to see what's coming. And although that sounds outrageous, and when I talked to this, you know, very nice man with the wellness company, I said, just because you don't think like one of these sinister guys doesn't mean there's people that aren't out there who would say to themselves, well, we can control people's minds if we influence their brain chemistry, but they have to take the drug. So how do we monitor that? Okay, what's the downside? Okay, we can use that electronic tablet to monitor taking, well, whatever. If we want to control your lifespan or your health span or make you sick with other things that we have to shove with your treatment, we can use that. This is technocratic fascism, technocratic control. Oh, wait a minute. We have a social credit system now.
Yes, we do.
It's an all digital currency. And you know what? You're non-compliant with your medication. Do you know that you missed a bunch of doses of the medication and you started freely thinking for yourself? Mm-hmm. And then you decided, oh, you know what? You can't transact with that farmer down the road. You have to buy what's in the grocery store. And sorry, it's only the bug protein now that we recommend for you. It's the bug protein. So people don't think a lot about that. That just sounds outrageous. It sounds like a science fiction movie. That would never happen.
Oh, people, it's happening.
I know. And they say, people won't do it to other people. I say, no, you wouldn't do it to other people. But there are sinister minds out there. You showed Albert Bourla. You showed him, this veterinary doctor who, he worked on products that would actually reduce fertility in animals. And look what's happening in people with the COVID vaccine.
Dr. Syke, I have a white paper from on the same childhood vaccine schedule from Henry Kissinger under the Ford administration. It's right here. This is a genocide plan by Henry Kissinger. And what he was saying to President Ford back then, and President Ford adopted this in his policy, that they were going to attack the female fertility of people around the world. I don't think at that point they were going to talk about the U.S. population, but it's here now if it wasn't back then. Thank you for joining us today on The Amber May Show. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And if there's someone that came to mind, please share this episode with them. Please follow us on Telegram at The Amber May Show, True Social Amber May, Frank Social Amber May, or Clout Hub. I can't wait to see you next time on The Amber May Show.